Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 450, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallish. I'm joined today by Derek Lodars from FireLogic.net. How you doing, Derek?
Hey, how are you, Jeff?
I am doing excellent today. Now, Derek, you were on Podnuts number, I think Podnuts Daily 273, according to the wonderful show notes that you put together for us.
Years ago. It's almost history in my eyes in terms of, when I was on last. That's actually when Steve was at the helm of the show. But yeah, I did Podnuts Daily with him back in October 2010. And I totally even forgot until I took a look at the link to the show what I actually talked about with him. So it was interesting to go back and see some of the things that I was doing back in 5 years ago. So
very cool. So now, obviously, you run your own business, and why don't you go ahead and give us a little bit of background? And I can't remember from, I've listened to every Podnuts Daily from the beginning. Actually, I was there when Steve basically started that show. And if you could just give us a little a background about yourself and basically how you got started in computer repair, some of the types of things that you went through.
Sure. Yeah, I'll definitely give a little bit of background on myself, Jeff. So I got a start, I like to tell everyone I got my start in IT and technology back when I was actually in high school. I'm only 28, so still a little, on the younger side. But I've been doing IT professionally since high school now, and really sort of what allowed me to take the plunge and get into the field and sort of, get a feel for what this industry requires and, some of the, baseline knowledge that was necessary to sort of get my start in this was actually in my junior and senior year. I actually took the chance to go ahead and sign up and take the A+ Network Plus class. The high school actually luckily offered it at our sister school in the district. So I took the opportunity, and actually A+ was a full-year class, and Network Plus was also a full-year class. I took those junior, senior year. I actually got certified in those exams. I was one of the few people that actually took the opportunity to complete the exam, so I was really happy about that. And I got my first big break, actually, when I was between my junior, senior year in high school. In the summer, actually got a chance by the tech department for the high school. They asked me, hey, we've got an opening. We've seen some of what you've been, doing with the computer club at school and know you've taken the A+ and class already. And they asked me to actually intern for the department for that summer going into my senior year. So I got my chance to get my feet wet to start doing support scenarios and, repairing computers and imaging labs and all the fun stuff that used to go on back in, that was like 2004, 2005 at that time. So over 10 years ago at this point. So I really enjoyed doing that. And I stayed on as an intern for the entirety of my senior year. And that was, I was doing my Network Plus that year as well. And I stayed on until the school year finished. And actually, before the year was over, I took a position with a one of my local competitors, still actually does business in town. And I'll talk a little bit more about that a little later as we get quite a bit of business from people that, not too happy with the kind of service that they provide. But regardless, I started working at that firm, and so my senior year of high school and then into freshman and part of sophomore year of college, I was working there. So I was actually doing the same thing I'm doing today. I was doing consulting. I was doing, on-site repairs and off-site repairs and, the whole gamut of computer repair, things that you'd be doing, that we're doing right now in our businesses, I was already doing when I was, only 18, 19, 20 years old. So it was a very good chance to get my, get my feet wet. I already had some experience at the high school, and this was my chance to sort of see what the private sector was like. So
nice.
I did that for a few years, and actually I had an opportunity then that came about, that involved a full-time position actually at the school district that I graduated from. So, you know, very funny round circle, kind full circle kind of situation that came about. So I applied for the position, interviewed for it, and was able to take that full-time position. And that was a, you know, full-time IT support position for, you know, the IT department at that high school. So it was a nice way for, again, for me to get back, go back to that organization and work there full time on a salaried basis. So I really enjoyed it. You know, I stayed there for, it was about 4 years doing that. And during my last 2 years that I was at that job is sort of when I started getting the ball rolling for my own business. And, you know, it's really funny. Everyone asks me, well, how did you get the idea? Or, you know, how did everything get, you know, get going with FireLogic? And, you know, I'm honest with everyone. I tell them it was really a hobby that turned into something, you know, a little bit greater. It was never something that I actually planned, you know, years back, or, you know, looking back at it now, it was never something that I sat down and planned out with a business plan or anything formal like that. It was just a matter of, I was, you know, just doing so much repair work on the side and for friends and family. And, you know, they were referring me to people they knew. So, you know, before I knew it, I was almost doing, you know, next to my full-time job and what I was doing on a part-time basis, I was, you know, already working, you know, 50, 60 hour weeks with, you know, doing repairs after hours on weekends, even, you know, a lot of my breaks were spent calling customers and setting up repairs that I was going on after the workday was over. So it was really neat. You know, I've always been someone that's been, you know, very motivated, and I've always loved this industry, love what I do. But I got the feeling that, you know, again, you know, from a tax perspective, it made sense to formalize this into a business. It made sense from a time perspective in terms of how much work I was getting at that point. So I formalized the company FireLogic in early 2010 and made it a business, but I actually still stayed on at my full-time job with the high school district. So from 2010 to mid 2012, I was kind of playing two hats. I was IT support for the school district, and I was doing my role and things that I needed to do for clients at with FireLogic. But, you know, about early 2012 was when things started to really pick up and get busy for, you know, for the company. I was already picking up some business clients at that point, and we had a very heavy residential following already, and I was stretching myself thin. So I sat down, you know, those spring and early summer months of 2012. And I asked myself, you know, I can't keep doing both jobs, you know, indefinitely.
Right.
So
okay.
I took the opportunity, said, you know what, FireLogic at that point had enough business to keep itself sustained. It was, you know, scary to go ahead and leave the, you know, full-time position with benefits and a full-time salary and just the comfort of a full-time job. And, you know, again, if I look back at some of what was the most difficult item in order to transition from, you know, doing something else to running my company full-time, I'd say that was it, is that comfort zone that you're in when you have a full-time job and saying, you know, the unknown, you know, what does that unknown look like, you know, away from, you know, what I'm already comfortable with. So that was a difficult, you know, step to get over and difficult leap to make, but I took the plunge, you know. So you have to, you know, look at yourself at a point in life and say, you know, this is the right, you know, point in time for me to take this full time. If I don't do it now, it's almost like I'm, you know, I'm never going to do it. So
right.
You know, that's what happened in mid 2012. And it was still just myself. I brought on later that year just a sort of a part-timer that I brought on a subcontracting basis, but I was pretty much running the business on my own. So, you know, the last few years since 2012, since I consider myself going full time with the business, we've gone through a few different phases. We actually went through, you know, where it was just myself. I had that, you know, subcontractor working with me. Then we sort of, you know, grew to what I call phase two, in which was, you know, us moving into a very, very small office in town, you know, pretty much a 150 square foot office, basically just for us to meet and talk and plan out projects and things that we were working on and allow people to drop off systems with us. So that, you know, that was, you know, FireLogic phase two for the most part. And then I look at, you know, our company since, you know, last year we've moved into a larger office, 1,300 square foot office here in the same town in Park Ridge. And, You know, now in terms of staff, we're about 7 people full time and another 5 part time subs. So, you know, we've come a long way. We've been growing very quickly. And, you know, when I look back and say, my gosh, did I see myself being at this point, you know, in 2012? Did I see myself at this point, you know, come 2013, 2014? It's been hard to envision, you know, how fast things have been going. So it's been a wild ride. It's been a journey, but I've enjoyed every part of it, every sliver of it. And, you know, and this is where we're at today. We're pretty much I call ourselves a hybrid organization. We're getting into the managed services side of things, but we're also still doing a lot of break fix, not only for businesses, but also on the residential side. So I've got my feet in both sides of the spectrum. So it's been an interesting path to start a transition for us.
Now, Derek, let me ask you a question. How did you drum up so much business? What types of things did you do that all of a sudden, within a 2-year period, you went from part-time to full-time?
Well, I think I look at it in two facets, Jeff. I have to be honest. You know, the first part of it is, again, I already had that, you know, the friends and family that were referring me to others, So the word of mouth was very critical, right?
Okay.
I mean, I was sort of the person that, was providing that repair service and computer support for, you know, this close group of people. But you know, as they started referring me and building that word of mouth snowball, as I call it, and it just started to grow and grow. And before I knew it, I had, you know, referrals coming out the wazoo. I just didn't know how to handle the load. I mean, it's a problem that a lot of people, you know, wish they had. And it was a good problem. I really didn't mind it other than, you know, having to work, you know, 50, 60, 70 hour a week sometimes, while others, you know, some of my friends were out there, you know, having a good time and, you know, partying on the weekends. But you know, I was sort of building the basis for growing this out from a client perspective, from a client based perspective, should I say?
Okay.
And the other piece of it is, you know, as you can imagine, and I think others have said this on the show in the past, when you have residential people you're doing support for, those are the ones that happen to also own businesses sometimes, right? So this is where I sort of got the introduction from some of those residential clients of, hey, you did a great job on my home computer. Come out. Let's take a look at my business machines. Or, hey, my business network is having some issues. So it was sort of an organic growth that started to happen from, you know, strictly residential to building into, hey, come to my office. Hey, my brother's got a company. Hey, I know this person that's got a business. Their IT guy left. Can you help them out? So that, I mean, that's really what it looked like. I mean, there's no single client that sort of was that, you know, big kahuna that allowed me to say, hey, we've got enough business. It was a mixture of a lot of small little clients, a lot of small little situations and referrals that we got that allowed me to build up that initial client base.
Very good. Okay. So how did you, what types of areas did you concentrate on? A lot of people will say that you can be fast, quick, or wait, what is it? Quick? I can't remember that. But anyways, what types of things did you kind of niche down on as far as, were you quick at getting your customers' computers done? Were you really good at getting it done? Or did you kind of base it on price when you started in the beginning?
Well, just like a lot of tech starting out, you know, in terms of what I was charging in those early years when I was doing this, I kind of shot myself in the foot, and it's been something that I've had to repair, you know, from a company perspective now, since, you know, we do have people that need to, you know, we do have labor overhead, we do have an office now and all kinds of other things that come into, you know, what our monthly expenses look like. So, in terms of what I was charging before, I wasn't charging what I was actually worth.
Okay.
And if there was one thing I had to fix, or if I look back and said, hey, I should have done this different, that was one of those things, is that I was charging too little. Now, again, I mean, a part of it, you can say, yeah, you didn't have a business back then. You were, you know, just doing this on nights and weekends. I was kind of restricted in terms of when I could repair people's computers. And from that perspective, sure, I couldn't command, you know, the kind of rates I probably should have. So I was not charging very much. I think if I look at some of the invoices I had when I was just doing that on a part-time basis, you know, some were like $40 an hour or $50 an hour. So I wasn't, you know, by all means, compared to what we charge now, was not charging, you know, probably what I should have been charging. But, you know, I look at it this way, Jeff. It was good for me because it allowed me to get my feet in the door, allowed me to get my feet wet a little bit and sort of, you know, get some of my processes down, figure out what kind of repairs I'm good at, figure out, you know, what goes quick, what doesn't get repaired quick, what right. items take a little more time, what customers are going to need that little extra TLC that some others may not need, right? These are the kind of things that you just don't have a full grasp of, you know, when you're getting started on a part-time basis and doing it on your own. So it was partial learning curve, and it was partial, you know, feeling out the market and sort of getting a feel for what people are willing to pay for the kind of service you're willing to provide. And back then, Jeff, honestly, I was pretty much doing the basic gamut of, you know, what you call computer repair items, you know, virus removals, the hard drive replacements, video card went bad, replace it, power supply went bad, just, you know, general cleanup, general, speed optimization, malware cleaning. So, you know, those are the, I'd say in terms of, you know, the bulk of my work, that was probably 90%+ of what I was doing those first few years.
Now, when you first got into businesses and you were you charging a lower rate at that point? And was there a process where you had to eventually move that rate up to a rate that would sustain your business?
Yes. Yes. So I had to actually, now I didn't start it at the low rate that I was doing for residential. So I knew right away that I had to go ahead and establish a higher rate.
You know, okay.
And it was very tough for me because actually, if I look back and if I recall what I was doing back in the early time when I had my first business clients, I think there was a small period of time where I actually did use, I take that back, I actually did use the same rate for client, for residential clients and business clients. And that was a mistake that I made up front and something that I wrote a technical article on that I probably should get recalled because my thinking has changed so considerably. But I look at it from this perspective. When you're talking about a business client and you're talking about the kind of support level they need, the kind of response time they need, and the kind of expertise that they're looking for, Jeff, you have to be able to differentiate that. You have to be able to justify, hey, you need a higher level of attention than a residential client that is going to be able to wait for on their PC to be repaired for 4 or 5 days or a weekend, whereas, you know, you need that PC to be back up and running next day or the day after that. So, you know, the kind of attention that I knew I had to provide those business clients was sort of what led the driving force for me to say, you know what, we have to have a differentiated business rate. And to this day, even today, we have a higher rate that we use for our business clients than we do for our residential clients. And I do that on purpose to signify that we're giving a higher level of attention, we're giving a faster response time, and we're also giving, you know, a higher priority to the business clients as they should be getting. So that is reflected in that rate, you know, that we have segregated into two different levels.
No, that makes perfect sense. I think that's where a lot of people get stuck when they first get started is they charge the low rates, they get into businesses, they're charging the low rates, and then the next thing they know, they're so busy, but they really can't keep up with all the businesses and all the residentials that they have, but they don't really know how to raise their prices. It becomes a sticking point. They're afraid of losing their business, and especially if you're doing it full time, that can be kind of scary to a lot of folks out there. So I was just curious on, from your standpoint, what types of things you had done, and that explained it very well.
Yeah, and going back to that, Jeff, this is something I wanted to mention later on towards the end of the show, but I guess I'll bring it up now since we're talking about rates. But you know, it's a concept of, and I went through this myself, it's almost like you go through this period of, you know, when you're getting started that you feel ashamed. You feel ashamed that you're charging. You know, I've got some friends that do this part-time, and they're, you know, they're embarrassed to charge almost anything. They give work away for free, And again, not only does that set a bad expectation level, not only between them and the client, but it also, you know, it sets a bad precedent that, you know, hey, my time's not worth as much as it should
right.
be worth. And I went through, again, that same agony internally of saying, you know, my gosh, $40 an hour, I mean, what do people say? That must be too expensive because this person said something or this cheapskate said something about it. But again, you can't look at it from a perspective of, you know, just because a few people have issues with your rate, because you know, you guys have talked about this time and time again on the show, Jeff. There's always going to be someone willing to do work at a cheaper rate than you. There's always going to be someone willing to undercut you. The Craigslist guys, you know, the guy down the block, the college kid. I actually got, you know, a lot of scenarios recently, we've come into situations where college kids, you know, have sort of been doing IT support for some people and then sort of fell off the face of the earth. And, you know, situations like that where, you know, people are almost willing to work for free and just doing it as more of a hobby and not as a business, as a full-time endeavor, you know, like we are on a professional level. So, right. You know, from that perspective, if you can justify the rate that you're charging, you can back it up. And there's multiple reasons we can, and maybe we can talk about that a little bit later and sort of my perspective on, you know, how to justify your rates. But if you can justify your rates, stand behind them. Don't be afraid to publish them. Don't be afraid to stick up to them when people say, my gosh, you know, you should be, you know, this price because Best Buy wanted to charge me this or Staples wanted to charge me that. You know what? So what? You know, we provide a level of service. We have a level of quality that we bring to the table. If that's not what you're looking for, you can go to the next, you know, to the next vendor that is going to charge you less.
Yeah, I look at it more from a relationship standpoint. Either I want to have a relationship with my customers. The other thing I had to look at, it's because I am a part-time business owner. I have a full-time job. Mm-hmm. I had to look at it from a standpoint of if I'm going to charge the lower rates, which I did in the beginning, then I'm taking time away from my family, things I could be doing with them. And quite honestly, for the rates that I was charging, it just became to a point where it wasn't worth it. My family was more important than the rates I was charging. Now, if I could boost it up a little bit and actually get paid what I'm worth, what ended up happening was I was working less, but yet making more, if that makes sense. So,
sure.
So that worked in the way I had to look at it, because I was just running around like a chicken with my head cut off. I was so busy, but that's because my prices were so cheap and people would just take advantage of that. And a lot of times those people, they wanted more than even the service that we were providing. They just expected more. I don't know why, especially when you're charging the cheap rate, right?
Yeah. And you have to look at it from this way, Jeff, as well. A lot of people that email me, you know, that are starting their own businesses and ask me, you know, from a perspective of, you know, should I be charging more? Should I be charging less? Why shouldn't I keep my rates low and just, you know, opt to do more work instead of just do less work and get paid more for it? You have to look at it from this perspective, is in that there's only so many hours in a day, right?
Right.
And in terms of my business and, you know, this kind of staff level that we have right now, where I'm doing all of the highest level consulting and business projects and Office 365 migrations, you know, for enterprises, for small businesses, all kinds of things like that, you know, my time is more valuable than some other staff members. Right?
Right.
And I have to be able to justify, if I'm taking my time away to give this business 10 hours of my time and provide service for that project, they're going to pay a premium for that, right? Because that time is valuable. That time is more valuable than some other staff members that are either, you know, lower end on the expertise scale or are just more akin to doing regular computer repairs. So as someone starts to get into the higher end of the business consulting computer repair market, where you're dealing with businesses, you're dealing with situations where higher levels of expertise are needed, you have to make sure that you're properly validating the kind of time you're spending. And in with that comes usually higher rates. So
right.
you want to be able to charge a little bit more for that work, because other companies, other vendors out there are for a fact doing so. And that is a 100% truth. So if you aren't doing so and are giving it away, you're only doing yourself a disservice, but you're also bringing down that average price point for your given local area unnecessarily, unfairly, right? And you're not only doing yourself a disservice, but you're doing a disservice to others that are also competing in the same market. So it doesn't help anyone for you to go out there and advertise super cheap rates when you're actually worth a higher price level.
Yeah, we've definitely talked about prices and how to gauge your price for what you want to make and what you want to bring into your income. And so there, and obviously whatever area you're in, everything's going to be a little bit different. But I think there's kind of probably, even across the United States, I would say there's a pretty simple base for most areas. Now, it might go up and down a little bit, but I don't think it varies as much as a lot of people think sometimes. They'll say, I'm in a smaller area, and so therefore I'm going to charge a cheap price. Yet I know people that are in small towns that charge, I mean, they're basically the only ones, but they charge a premium rate for what they do, and they do very well for themselves. So It just all depends.
Yeah, and you have to. And one last thing about the pricing side of things, Jeff. And you know, when it comes to the computer repair side, as you were just talking about, yes, there's base rates, average going rates for that side of it. But you know, techs have to keep in mind that if you're looking to grow your business, if you're looking to take your business full time, and like I said, get into the very lucrative business and commercial side, mm-hmm. which is where the real big money is. If you're looking to do this full time, that's where you can definitely start justifying segregated, pricing structures in terms of different hourly rates. You know, we have a different hourly rate that we charge for standard commercial support work that we do. That's also different from the kind of rates we charge for clients that are under HIPAA or under PCI compliance and have, needs in that side of the sector, because, that work comes with different levels of insurance that we have to have, different kinds of training that our staff has to have, more paperwork overhead and administrative overhead that comes along with it. So again, if you're looking to make those next steps with your business and get into those higher levels where you can charge premiums for the kind of work that you're doing, you have to be able to realize that working in that side of the IT sphere, comes with a higher level of overhead. And that's it's one of the mistakes that I made, is that you think that, because I'm doing work right now at $70 an hour, $80 an hour, that's going to hold true and allow me to buy all the things that I need or get the insurance that I need or the tools that I need. And my gosh, there's so much that goes into, running a 7-person company like we do compared to when it was just myself working out of my condo. It's a night and day difference. So you have to be able to keep your rates consistent with the level that your business is at that point in time.
Very good points. All right. With that being said, let's talk about some of the products and tools that you're using in your business.
Yeah. This is a great section that I really wanted to get into. We've got some great things that we've been using, and compared to what I was doing, 5 years ago, compared to what we're using now, it's a totally different situation. And again, I'm not going to spend too much time on the malware removal or the traditional just, bare bones repair side of things. There's a few things I want to touch on that I think some techs may really be interested in.
Okay.
And one of those first things is, I don't know, have you heard of the new cell service from Google?
Yes.
Jeff, from Google Fi?
Yep, I sure have.
Do you use it or not?
No, I've been on Sprint for so long that I have not looked into anything as of yet.
So Google Fi, and again, I don't want to turn this into a consumer electronics show in any way, but I wanted to mention this because I think this is a valuable tool in terms of being a service that I think might serve a lot of computer techs really, really well. And the biggest reason for that is, I was in the position of a gun. I was using T-Mobile for my cell phone needs previously. And, I've been a long time user of Windows Phone for a few years. I really love Windows Phone. So considering this Project Fi was a little, scary for me because I knew I couldn't bring my Windows Phone over with me. So I made the transition and gave Google Fi a try. I've been at it now for almost a month, and I have to say that I'm pretty darn happy with it.
Okay.
And I say that for a few different reasons. One of the biggest things that I was running into before, and as any tech can probably attest to, that is using a cell phone, no matter whether it's Verizon or Sprint, T-Mobile, AT&T, no matter any of the big names here in the U.S., but there's always situations where you have dead zones, right?
And yes.
In our area here in Chicago, even though all the big names advertise, coverage in almost every single spot, within a 45-mile radius or so of downtown Chicago, I do so many jobs out in the suburban areas here where you've got some rolling hills, you've got some areas with spotty coverage, no matter who it is. I've got colleagues on Verizon and Sprint and all the big names, and we go into these areas for jobs, and without any trouble, of course, there's areas where we're not getting cell service.
Okay.
Google's Project Fi cell service is really different in that it uses actually two different carriers. So it actually brings your Sprint to the table with my T-Mobile that I used to use, and it allows you to utilize both of those carriers on the same cell phone. So this really hasn't been done before in the U.S. market, sort of this dual carrier approach.
Okay.
And it's really not from a perspective of having more data at your disposal every single month, because you actually have to be a little more careful with how much data you're using because you're on the hook for every single gig that you use. But from my perspective of going into areas where I used to have spotty coverage or have dead zones when I'm out doing a network job and I got to get on a call with Comcast or an ISP to be able to troubleshoot a connection issue that's going on, I find myself having less and less issue with dead zones. And as a matter of fact, since I've switched to it, I can't recall the last time I actually have had no cell signal other than a basement or, you know, elevator, which, you know, don't get signal regardless. But in terms of dead zones out in the open, out in the rural areas or suburban areas here, at least in the Chicagoland region, I haven't had any issues. So that's really a really positive aspect for me of this Google Fi service.
Now, that's interesting because they're using two different wireless cards, basically. They're using the CDMA and the T-Mobile is, I can't remember the name of the other one.
GSM.
Yeah, GSM. So you've got multiple radios there. That, I'll tell you what, that makes perfect sense right there, because usually no matter where you're at, you can pick up one or the other really well.
Exactly. And that's the point behind it.
Where right.
There's areas where T-Mobile doesn't have coverage, Sprint fills in the gap and vice versa on the other side. So, you know, the only issues I've seen with it is that Google advertises this very speedy transition is as if, you know, T-Mobile doesn't have service, it switches to Sprint. And this is, you know, they advertise it as a very quick transition. I found in my experience that whatever carrier you're connected to likes to hang on for a little bit longer than it should. and that looks like, you know, you're going into down from 4G down to 3G, and sometimes it turns into, you know, like I forget what the older speed access was, but it goes into that, you know, single digits kind of service sometimes.
Sure.
So in terms of, you know, it being able to kick over a little faster, that's, you know, one of the wishes that you know, I'm hoping that Google's able to do. But overall, from perspective of giving you coverage no matter where you are, you're going to be able to make text or phone calls you know, anywhere that you're at, as long as, you know, the Fi map shows you as having coverage in that area. So Google's been pretty good on that side of things.
Now, basically, to sign up for the service, what did you have to do? Did you have to buy the phone and just sign up for the service, or how does that work?
It's pretty much two things. It was pretty simple. I had to give up my Windows phone and purchase some supported device on the list. So there's only three devices that can do it right now, and that's one of the other, you know, downsides about this, is that you can't really bring your current phone unless you're using the phone that's on the supported list, and that is pretty much the 2014 Google Nexus 6, which is what I bought for myself, lightly used. It was super cheap. I got it for like $220, $230, and it's been great for me. Or you can use one of the newer Nexus devices, the Nexus 6P or this 5X that Google came out with. I believe it was back in late October, early November.
Okay.
So it's only three devices you can choose from. There's some kind of magic switchery that's going on with the radios and how they design that to function for the Google Fi service. I'm hoping that list expands, but in terms of my experience on the Nexus 6, I the phone's been a great phone for me. You know, I still like, you know, the Windows Phone interface a little bit more than Android, but in terms of being usable and getting my work done and allowing me to use maps wherever I'm going, even when I used to have some spotty coverage before, it's been really great from that perspective. So if there's any techs out there that are kind of either on the end of a contract or searching for a new service, I really recommend you give Google Fi a look, as it may be something that might serve you really, really well. And in terms of what you need from Google, so you bring the phone, you purchase the phone, and the only other thing is you just have to go on and Google's really kind of strange about this, because again, this is sort of a beta product still, so they're not letting everyone get a SIM card from the service right away. They're sort of doing the invite system right now.
Okay.
The way I got into it was actually, I sort of just made the plunge and I sort of just took a dive on a day they did an instant invite. So it was like mid-October or something. They offered one day where you could sign up and get a SIM card approved automatically. And that's kind of what I did. So I had the SIM card on the way. I ordered the phone and I was able to light up the service then once the SIM arrived. And it was nice because Google didn't charge me anything until I activated that SIM. So I had some waiting time I could use, if I was, finishing things off with my previous carrier or whatnot. So
okay, sounds simple enough, and the prices look similar. Now, I've often thought about actually getting a secondary phone just for use with business. Right now, I use the Grasshopper service, which rings basically my phone, and I can answer phone calls from there, and I know whether it's a business line coming in or whether it's a personal phone call. So that's what I've done. But I have often played around with the idea, and this might get me off that ledge. I might actually do something like that, where I actually have a phone that's dedicated just to my business.
And in might be cost effective to look at this for that perspective as well, because as I put in the show notes, Jeff, the pricing for it is very simple, straightforward. So compared to these higher, you know, monthly or prepaids that you're doing with some of the other providers, the way Google does it, very simple. And I think it's very honest the way that they're handling this. So $20 is your base for unlimited calling and texting. I believe it's nationwide, you know, calling included with that. There's a lot of, I think Canada, Mexico get free calling as well as part of that, but don't hold me to it. International rates are very cheap as well. So that's your $20 base for your calling and texting. And then in terms of how much data you use, it's $10 per gig. And the nice part about that is that if you go over, you're not charged any kind of penalty. You're just charged for that extra portion of data that you use. And they do portion it out. So it's not like you have to pay for a full gig. If you only used another half a gig, they're just going to charge you $5, you know, instead of the $10 for a full gig. And likewise, if you're prepaying for, you know, 1 or 2 gigs of service and you're going to use less, you know, for example, I just checked my usage and I'm almost on my, you know, on the end of my first month and I'm actually under a gig in terms of how much data I've been using. Google's likely going to refund me back the unused, you know, portion of that on my next month's bill. So it's this consistent, constant rollover that you're getting for unused data in terms of a credit. And I think it's really great. I haven't seen any other provider do that. And, you know, I really think that, you know, some kind of wake-up call was needed in the cell industry. And I'm you know, hopefully Google does it. So again, it's still a beta project. It's still something that has some rough edges on it. So if you're looking for a superior experience, you know, like Verizon or, you know, something you're very used to, this may not be for everyone, but if you're on the bleeding edge, like, you know, a lot of people may be, as, you know, I'm in tech and I love, you know, new stuff like this. So it's served me very well. And again, I just, you know, really recommend you look into it. If you're on the end of a cell phone contract, it's a pretty cost effective way to get really, really good cell phone coverage.
Okay. Very good. All right. So I'm looking at the second thing on the list, and Fab's Auto Backup 6 Pro is one that I love and use all the time.
It's kind of funny. This is a tool that I've heard talked about. You know, I've been listening to Podnuts for so many years. And probably like a lot of techs out there, you probably hear the name, you hear people talk about it and how much time it saved, but it's just like, you know, we get bombarded with so many different tool suggestions out there that you think, oh, I'll get to it. It's probably not that great. And, you know, it's really funny. We actually gave it a trial after I heard it on one show. Someone was talking about it back in June or July. So actually I told one of my techs, you know what, we got to give this thing a try. We got these 3 PCs coming in that need to have, you know, full user profiles migrated because their hard drives were dying or they needed new installs. I forget what the scenario was, but we gave it a try, and you know, I was blown away with what this product can do. So again, I get nothing from saying that this product was very, very good. I really recommend that if you're a technician or a computer repair shop, you take a look at it. The price of Fabs is very cheap, and the tool pays for itself with just, I think, one single job. Less than one job for us paid for the tool in terms of its capabilities. So I think it's awesome. It moves everything. It moves wallpapers. It moves user settings. You guys were saying in the last show, network and file shares is well. I mean, this tool is a real deal. So it's something we rely on almost any Windows reinstall that's going on at our office now.
And well, the more exciting thing than that to me, even though this isn't going to help many people except myself, is it moves my Steam profiles in all my saved games. So.
And that's actually a good thing, because we actually have some clients that within the last year, and unfortunately we didn't have the tool purchased yet, so I didn't use it. When we had some of these client situations, we actually did these Steam moves manually, and it was good because I got a technician here that's really well acclimated with Steam, and she was able to do it manually. But, you know, heck, in terms of how the tool does it on an automated basis, I mean, it just makes it that much better. And I really like how fast the tool is developing in terms of, you know, changing on a monthly basis and new versions are being released. Well worth every penny we paid for it. So absolutely. I highly recommend it. We purchased the 6 Pro version. I mean, some people might be able to get away with the regular one, but, you know, for the few bucks extra the Pro was, I'd give this developer every single penny. It was well worth it. So
absolutely.
Love it.
I bought the last several versions, I think since version 3. So this 6 Pro is just, it blows me away is how good it is. And that's why I purchased it, because it works. It does what it needs to do. I've moved systems from a Windows 7 machine, backed up the profile, installed it into a Windows 8 machine, no problem. And it's, everything's there. The customer, other than the few icons and things that change between Windows 7 and Windows 8, the customer really is not going to know a huge amount of difference. They're like, hey, my wallpaper's there. Hey, all my stuff's here. And they love it from that standpoint.
It's worked really well. And actually, another scenario we've been using it for as well, and this was one of the other driving reasons why we got it, is we've got a lot of small business situations right now where we either have people transitioning to new systems on an AD domain or even more powerful. We had a situation, we actually just about a month and a half ago, we actually set up a fresh AD domain for a church we were brought into. They had, you know, just a work group set up, and we actually moved their admin office onto a proper domain for a new server we put in. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be cringeworthy for how much time it's going to take to move over a local profile to a new AD domain account that they had. We ran this tool on all, I think it was four or five systems that were in the admin office. The tool worked like a champ. Everything was moved. They didn't even ask us a single question about where was this file or where was that shortcut right. They had. It just did the job. So from that perspective, from a business AD domain, from a local user to an AD user, moving them over, oh my God, it saved us so much time. And I love this tool so much for that fact. So
absolutely. All right, so the next thing on the list, and this I find this very interesting because I've never tried one. It's the DataVac.
Yeah, so the DataVac is actually a tool, and this is sounds like something very simple, but in terms of dusting out computers, this is something that I've personally been struggling with since I got this, my business started, and it's really funny. There's probably a lot of techs out there that are just using, compressed air, right? You go out, you buy a few cans of compressed air, costs you $8 or $10 a pop for a 3 or 4 pack, and you're like, I'll just, keep getting these. But, that gets expensive after a while. And the other thing is, once that can gets down past about 70-80%, your last 20% or so of blowing strength is really not that great. So you're not really getting a full can of a full air out of that thing. So I was past that. I said, there's got to be something better. So then, I think this was probably like 2010, 2011, first year or two of FireLogic. I actually went out and purchased a little mobile air compressor that I was taking around to jobs with me in the car. And it was pretty good. It was like a gallon and a half air compressor that I had. But the darn thing was heavy and, had to be always plugged in and recharged before I could use it. And it was loud, so I could never recharge in the company's office or a customer's office, should I say. So, in terms of a power perspective, it was great. It provided, really great cleaning on the machines we were working on. But from a portability and a ease of use perspective, it was kind of a pain in the rear. So, my third iteration of cleaning out machines is now DataVac. And this is an awesome tool. I was actually introduced to it by a colleague of mine. He's actually a part-timer that works with us, and he's a good friend of mine from high school, but he introduced me to the DataVac, and this is actually a little device. I put it in the show notes. I put the link to it if anyone is interested in it, right off of Amazon, but it's a $56 device, free shipping as well. I think it's on Amazon Prime, but this device is basically a little, it's a little canister. It's like a little portable blowtorch, if you've ever seen one. It's about that size, and it basically is a power cord you plug into the wall outlet. If you need, you can pair an extension cord with you if you have to, but this tool is awesome. We have one in every single tech bag in terms of our on-site techs, including myself. Plus, we have a one of these inside the office for ourselves, and this thing, you basically plug into the wall, and you've got, I don't know what the a term for it is for how much blowing power it provides, but this thing is probably the equivalent of probably two cans of compressed air. If you were to have the power of two cans of compressed air at a single time, it's about that powerful for how much, how well it can blow out. So any single system that comes into our office now, we are cleaning out with this thing. When we go on site, clean out servers and network devices, all kinds of things. I mean, I got a colleague we work with in the industry who doesn't have one yet. I keep telling him to get one, but he says, bring your data back. We got a lot of systems we got to clean out. So it is another one of those tools that you will kick yourself for how many times you bought compressed air, and you could have just bought this $56 DataVac and saved yourself so much time and hassle and cost of rebuying compressed air. But it pays for itself with just a few packs of air, and it's great. It's not that loud for the amount of power it provides. I mean, it's got a little bit of noise to it. We're lucky here at our office that we can take systems out behind the, we're on the first floor over here, so we take them outside and dust them out there. But even if you have to do it in an office or a business network closet, something like that, and keep it on for a few few minutes. It's so powerful. You can dust out a system really easily. And when you're all done, you just turn it off and it's ready to go next time. And it's just got a little air filter at the bottom of it. You just got to watch and keep clean. If it, you know, you got a lot of dust that's kicking up, it probably gets, you know, dirty a little bit faster because that's where the intake is. But aside from that, there's no other maintenance you have to do. Nothing has to be re-greased or oiled or anything. It's just put it in your bag, bring it out and use it, and put it away ready for the next job. So it's an awesome, awesome investment. I recommend it to any technician that has had to deal with very dirty systems, or you have, you know, systems you're cleaning out on a consistent basis. It pays for itself in no time.
That is great. And thanks for just costing me $57, by the way. Appreciate it. Because ordered Prime, be here in a couple of days. So right now I use, and I've been looking for something because, again, I've used a compressed air on laptops inside my office because I really don't feel like taking a laptop outside. Now for my desktop computers, I still use a leaf blower. Because it's very powerful. It gets all the stuff. I can do it in the middle of my garage and blows stuff everywhere. But it works great. But this, I'm definitely going to give this a try.
If you try the DataVac, Jeff, I will be fairly confident that you'll say that thing is probably as powerful, maybe okay, just a little less powerful than a leaf blower, but it's a lot quieter, and heck, it's a lot more portable. So
again, that's what I'm looking at.
You do a lot of repairs. I know that people, you know, bring them to you, but, you know, especially for people that are on site most of the time, like we are in businesses and things.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing is an awesome, awesome tool to have. You never have to worry if your compressed air can is out. This thing is always ready to go. And it's always working at full blast. It's just great. I can't speak highly enough about it. It's probably one of the best things we carry around in all of our tool bags. And for $56, it doesn't break the bank. I mean, like I said, it's only 3 or 4 packs of compressed air that you would have otherwise bought at Staples or some other big box store. Only this thing is going to last you for many years to come.
Nice. All right. Very cool. Awesome. All right, let's move it on to the next thing. We have PC Check. What is that?
Yeah, so PC Check is actually for anyone that straddles the line of legality and has ever used the tool MRI. Geek Squad is actually Best Buy's tool, and we actually had a former staff member that used to work at Best Buy and sort of introduced us to this tool. And it's actually, if anyone's ever, I think you guys have talked about this on the show before, where someone left this in the Geek Squad left it in the CD drive of a laptop that was repaired and the tech was able to try it.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, so MRI is Geek Squad's internal tool, and there's a lot of stuff they do on that MRI CD, and that really, you know, again, neither here nor there, whether it makes your life faster. But the one tool on there that I really was impressed with, and we buy a full licensed copy of it, and I pay for maintenance on it every single year now because of how great it's been, is this tool called PC Check. And on that tool, on that MRI, this is the thing that pretty much allows Geek Squad to diagnose any computer that comes into their shop, no matter what vendor it's from. Now, this doesn't do Macs, but this tool pretty much allows you to do testing on, I'll say, over 95% of other PCs out there. It has issues with some systems, like I had some Lenovo laptops from 2009 a few weeks ago that it would refuse to work on and got frozen up on. But overall, you know, 99 out of 100 machines that come into our office, we're able to run this tool overnight, and it pretty much does. If anyone's familiar with Dell Diagnostics, right? The full Dell Diagnostics testing, Jeff, you've seen those, right?
Oh, yeah, they're already on the, you mean in the OEM systems, right?
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. But not every system comes with that, right? The Dell Diagnostics don't come with a lot of the home machines that they sell. It's really only for some of the business class systems they have. And PC Check pretty much gives you that deep system board level parts validation and diagnostics for any kind of computer that you could throw at it. So we put Sony's, we put Toshiba's, we've got any kind of laptop that can boot from a USB drive or a DVD drive, you can run PC Check on. And it pretty much goes through. It does a memory stress test. So it gives you the benefits of Memtest. It gives you the benefits of a processor check, make sure the processor is good. The hard drive, which is, of course, the thing that usually goes bad on a system. The hard drive is fully tested for write tests and read tests and smart checks and all those various things that otherwise you'd have to, you know, between Hirons, and we use Hirons quite quite a bit, but you know, we used to do with HireNZ or Ultimate Boot CD or finding the, you know, the hard drive manufacturer's diagnostic utility, and sometimes they weren't work 100% because of this drive controller or this SATA a controller or things like that. PC Check really doesn't care, and this tool, again, I forgot what we paid for it initially up front. I think it was like somewhere in the $200 range for a copy of it, and then you pay maintenance every single year if you want to keep it up to date, and we choose to do that because I want to be able to get all the latest diagnostics for newer chipsets and things that come out. But in terms of being able to allow us to put a green check mark on a system, this tool has been invaluable for us, more so than Ultimate Boot CD or HireNZ has been, because again, this tool is one single tool where you can put on a flash drive or a DVD drive, and we pretty much, any system that comes into our office now, we tell the customer, hey, this system is staying overnight, it's running on our tech bench, and it's going to pass diagnostics, and we're not going to do anything with software until we can verify that the hardware is good inside, because I can't tell you how many times when I was just getting started, I quoted out for someone that, hey, oh, I think it's just a registry issue or a malware infection, and lo and behold, you know, I find out either midway through the repair or I find out 2 weeks later that the hard drive actually was damaged and having issues, and that was causing part of the slowdown for that customer. I said never again. And you know, we've sort of been in this mindset now of, you know, we're going to validate the hardware inside before we touch anything with a customer software. And that policy has been very, very good for us because, again, it's allowed us to catch parts that are going bad, specifically hard drives and memory chips. And it's allowed us to, you know, find those things out without having a customer dump time and money into us doing, you know, Windows reinstalls or malware removals for a system that, hey, you know, if it's got bad memory or if it's got a hard drive going out, it may be more worth it to go ahead and, you know, and look at a new one right now. So, We've been using PC Check now since it was about last spring of 2014. We purchased it legally, I think, about June of 2014, and we haven't looked back. So very, very good product. I really recommend you look into it. If you've been looking for a diagnostic that works on almost any system you could throw at it, PC Check is that gold standard for us.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I was going to say, as far as I can't remember a system, and again, this is mostly laptops, so maybe that makes a difference. I cannot remember a laptop in the last 3 years that has not had the OEM's diagnostic software on there. Now, I will say this, I never know 100%, and I would imagine that PC Check is probably doing a little more in-depth than even what the OEM manufacturer's diagnostic tool is doing.
Yeah, PC Check is more in line with what Dell Diagnostics does. I think Dell Diagnostics, of all the ones I've seen built into the motherboards or within system, you know, mm-hmm. recovery partitions, Dell Diagnostics, I think, is second best next to what PC Check does.
Okay.
But a lot of them, you know, when you think about it, the ones that they're including with machines, they're usually only including memory tests or hard drive tests. Very rarely are you getting a full system diagnostic in terms of testing the motherboard, testing all the timers, testing the CMOS battery, the BIOS, testing out all the things that may potentially have an issue that, hey, might throw something off or be causing part of a problem here or there. So, and that's sort of where PC Check, you know, fills that void where, you know, anyone can test memory or hard drive these days, but can you test all the other parts in that machine, the processor, the system board, everything else that's connected on the inside?
Yeah, I was going to say things like the CMOS battery, that'd be good because a lot of times what I'll do is I'll pull them out and manually check those. But if I find that might be a problem, but to have a tool that'll basically go through all that stuff all in one shot, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. And like I said, it also has, when you build your boot CD or your USB key, whatever you wish, you have the choice of including all the tests that they have. And there's all kinds of stuff that, you know, we don't even include. There's like keyboard checks and, you know, external mouse tests that you can do. So you can get really crazy and you could have a test that runs for days on end. But, you know, we've sort of trimmed it down and we use sort of the template that sort of Best Buy uses on their MRI disk. We were able to suck out their script and we sort of use their script because it's kind of a good balance between how long it takes and all the things that it checks. But again, it's a great tool. You can customize it to your heart's content and it's worked extremely well for us. One of those things, just like the DataVac, worth every single penny that we spent on.
Gotcha. No, it looks like a good tool. I'm checking it out right now. All right. There'll be a link for that too. All right. So Fluke testers. Tell me a little bit about those. What are you using those for?
Yeah, so I've heard others on the show. I don't know if it was this show or on Mike Tech's show. They've talked about the Fluke testers before. But again, if you're doing any kind of testing or validation, or you have situations where you're doing network support at especially at business offices, well, even residential sites. I mean, we do a lot of networking setups and wiring for homes these days as well, where we need to be able to validate whether jacks are good or bad. And I would say that if there's one thing that'll make your life a lot easier, it's that you should probably invest in some kind of a good network tester. And the ones that we utilize, now I carry around one that was a little bit more expensive, but it's no longer made, unfortunately, and that's called the FlukeNet Tool 2. It's basically an inline Cat5/Cat6 analyzer where it can go ahead and tell me if PoE is working across a network line, if all the leads on that network jack were properly terminated, at what speed that connection is working at, what length of cable that connection also has from end to end. So all that juicy stuff that you'd otherwise have to figure out manually, you know, a tool like this is able to do for you. And there's a lot of ones on the market, and I know that Fluke is not the only one that does them. But I think for the level of quality and features that they provide, especially the second one I put on the show notes, Jeff, the Microscanner 2. yes. I think that one's well worth the money. I think it's like in the $350 range or $400. It's definitely not over $500. But again, this is a tool that you should consider an investment. This is something you won't have to be rebuying in, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 years. If you treat this thing well until, you know, our, you know, Cat 7 or something higher comes along, you'll be able to diagnose almost any network that you walk into these days. And it's invaluable, because I've heard before on shows where techs were spending, you know, hours trying to figure out if you know, what jacks were bad or what, you know, lines were in what positions or locations. You can also do toning and probing with these tools right out of the box if you have the probing wand. So you can connect it to a mystery jack in one office, go back to the main network closet and figure out with the sound wand which particular line it is. And that saved our rear end, you know, many times. So it's a very, very good tool. All of our techs carry one on a day-to-day basis in their tool bags. And again, one of those things that I really feel is, you know, worth its weight in gold and worth every single penny that we spent on them. So definitely take a look at the Fluke Microscanner 2 if you're looking for an entry-level quality network testing device.
Excellent. All right, moving down to, you're going to have to help me out with this, Meraki firewalls?
Yeah, Meraki. I think it's called Meraki. Unless I'm wrong on that.
I don't know.
But Meraki is actually a company that was, it was its own company. It was bought by Cisco more than a few years ago, back in like 2011, 2010, something like that. But this is actually a company that is a subsidiary of Cisco, and it makes cloud-managed firewalls, switches, and access points. And we don't really use them for the switch side, because the switches are, I'll even admit, a little expensive, a little too expensive for most clients that we work with. But in terms of their firewalls and their access points, these things have been a godsend for us. And they've actually been such great devices that, at least for the firewall side, I mean, this is something we almost require now for any single customer that's looking to go and manage support with us. And The way I got my feet wet with this Meraki company was, you know, we've been using the full gamut of all kinds of different routers out there. And of course, you know, talking about firewalls or routers is like talking, you know, car guys talking about cars. Everyone's got their own opinion. Everyone, you know, thinks they're the expert at it. But from my perspective, you know, these devices have really been treating us pretty well. And some of the things that these things can do that you don't get from some of the things like Sonic Walls or WatchGuards or you know, Cisco Small Business Line, some of the things that you probably would be using in place of a device like this, there's a few benefits that, you know, we've seen over the last year plus of standardizing on these things. The first is, as opposed to having a separate IP login that you have to do either from you know, a public address to manage the device, or, you know, you have to go ahead and remember what the internal management address was for a given router or access point, when it comes to the Meraki ecosystem, all these devices are accessible from a single dashboard. So you go ahead, you create an account for yourself, basically tied to your email address, and you log into it. And if you only have one customer you have a device on, well, you'll have just one dashboard to go into. But as you start building up the number of customers that are using this gear, it's very nice, because we log in pretty much at, you know, we go to Meraki.com, we log in with our account, and we see a full listing of every single customer that has the devices. We click on that client, and then we have full access into their whole network. So we can go ahead and manage the firewall. We can go manage any branch offices that they have. We can manage the access points at any single given site. And you know, this becomes more important for techs that are starting to move more into the small business space. If you're just a tech doing home level repair, you know, I'd be hard pressed to see that, you know, how much value you're going to get from this. But as you start managing more and more small businesses, and if they're using this gear, you'll be able to have that single pane of glass to be able to see any kind of problems going on, see what settings were wrong, go in there and change things or analyze reports that they have. So from a perspective of before, where we were pretty much had you know, devices out in the wild, and you had separate logins you had to remember for every single one, and hey, what firmware version was this one on? You know, all those kind of things really go by the wayside with a platform like this.
Okay.
What are the other things they do that I really, really like? And I've talked about this a lot. I do a lot of writing for betanews.com, as I'll mention a little bit later. But I've mentioned how, you know, it's really unfortunate that a lot of devices these days really don't have an easy way for people to keep them up to date. Right, with as many threats as we've had, as many, you know, last year's attack on Xbox Live and PlayStation Network at Christmas by Lizard Squad. What was that? That was basically an attack on all the home routers out there from Linksys and Netgear and all that. And they took them over and used them for their, you know, their big botnet that was taking, you know, DDoSing big organizations. So
right.
That was because we had all these unpatched, non-updated routers out in the wild. And Meraki's solution fixes that from the ground up because it says, you know what? We'll take care of that updating for you. You don't have to worry about it. So that's another big thing. It automatically updates all the devices that you have from the company on any given network you're using them on.
Yeah, I was going to say, as far as from the residential side, as far as your routers, whether it's a $50 router up to a $200 router, I would see, or even a $300 residential router for that matter, you might be lucky to get one firmware update in the life of that. Most of the time you get none. They'll usually go whatever you buy it with. That's pretty much what you're stuck with most of the time for at least a 5-year period until you actually replace that router.
And again, it's really unfortunate because again, you know, not only did you pay good money for that device and you should be able to keep that thing up to date, but, mm-hmm. you know, in my perspective, I think vendors have a responsibility to keep those devices updated because, you know, we're not getting any less networked in the way we're running our lives and all the homes and automation systems. And, you know, I just installed a Nest thermostat, you know, a week and a half ago, and that's online. Everything we're putting, you know, into our homes these days has an IP address, and your front door for all those devices is your firewall, is your router.
Right.
And again, when you have big vulnerabilities come out and router companies that refuse to update these devices after a year or year and a half of them being on sale, you know, I think it's just a very bad precedent and standard. And again, while it's unfortunate for the home side of things, when we're talking about a business perspective, or especially from, you know, some of the clients that we work with that are either under PCI compliance or HIPAA compliance, you know, those regulations state that you have to be keeping your first head and firewall up to date and patched and maintained. So, you know, meeting compliance, very strict compliance like that, this becomes very, very super easy with these Meraki devices.
Very cool.
Right. Yeah, so just a few last things about it. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but you know, next day warranty replacement, Meraki does that for as long as you have them licensed. 24/7 support they offer from the organization. They actually have all US-based support, so you're not calling India or China. You're actually calling US-based engineers working in the US, and these guys are awesome. We've gotten so many sticky situations with their help that it's definitely paid for itself just from that perspective. And the final great thing is that, you know, these boxes, if you license them at the little higher level, you get intrusion prevention, intrusion detection, and you can also do content filtering for things like website whitelisting, blacklisting, things like that for groups of users based on Active Directory groups, things of that nature. So you can get really advanced and tight-knit with what kind of security you're using. So, you know, we've got these at the smallest of businesses to some, you know, mid-size and larger organizations that we support. And, you know, these devices are fitting into each, you know, each side of that spectrum very, very well. So it's been a really, really great technology investment from our perspective of, you know, giving those guys a try.
Very cool. All right. Yeah, definitely check that out. So let's move on to the next section we have here, and that's business tips in how you guys actually get work for your company.
Sure. Yeah. Let's take a look at this one. I got a few good things that I put on the list here because, again, you know, position I am now compared to where I was back in 2010, Jeff, when I just got started and made my My first appearance on Podnuts when I was a one man shop, and now I've got, you know, people under me, and you know, we've got a help desk and all kinds of different things of that nature. You know, I look back and I say, wow, what has allowed us to get to this position compared to where I used to be? So one of the first things, actually, we talked about this a little bit before the show started, was you know, I started doing a lot of volunteer classes at our local libraries, and part of the driving force that kind of, you know, made me jump on that wagon of doing that wasn't necessarily, I was thinking about it from perspective of, hey, I'm going to grow my client base from this. It was, that was sort of a consequence of doing this. The real reason I did it was I was actually going for my Google App certification, and that was, it's a very strict certification that requires a certain number of training hours that you can validate. And I was using this to do my Google training out in the public, and, you know, so I can get that validated and get my certification. So it allowed me to do that, you know, and I've been certified for a few years now, but I kept going with the classes and kept doing these volunteer classes because I found them to be a really interesting source of clientele locally, right? Not only are these places, you know, very local, and people coming to the library around us are the ones that live in the community, right? They follow, you know, if it's the, you know, whether they're Park Ridge or Niles or Chicago, wherever they're from, you know, they're following the news of their local library. So I get an easy way of getting in front of those faces in terms of the classes I'm going to offer. But it also, as I built the trust and, you know, over the years of doing so many classes, and I'd say now, I mean, I used to do more of them. Now, as I've gotten busy, I do less classes, maybe about 6 to 7 a year instead of doing like one a month that I used to do. But it's allowed me to build a good relationship with them and a trusted relationship in that they're pretty much referring us by name now. So, you know, they say, hey, you know, FireLogic, they're the ones that have, you know, put on the classes on Windows 10 or Google Apps or you know, Microsoft's OneDrive. You know, hey, they also offer computer repair. You've got this issue with your machine. Go ahead and give Derek a call. He'll take good care of you. And that's the kind of, you know, referral basis that we have now with, it's now 3 libraries and, you know, potentially going to be growing to a few more. And that's really allowed us to get in front of a lot of good residences. And from a perspective of, you know, people trust the word of their friends, but they tend to also trust the word of, you know, an organization like a library, because, you know, again, they're going to see it as an unbiased and objective perspective, and they're going to really see that referral coming from the library as being, you know, very worthy and you know, something that they should consider. So we've had a lot of people come to us from the classes that we do, and I say, you know, in terms of percentage of new residential clients we get every single year from our library classes, I say it's a good 20 to 25% of our residential client base. So that's pretty
awesome.
Darn big. It doesn't, aside from the time I have to take into planning classes and putting them on and posting the, you know, the videos to our YouTube channel afterwards, there's not much expense that goes into it. Now, again, everyone's time is worth something, but I do these on the weekend. It's not encroaching on my workday, and, you know, we're building an very easy, you know, customer base, residential customer base from it. And again, as I was saying before the show, not only are these, you know, we're getting quite a bit of faces coming from these classes, but also some of these faces tend to own businesses. And those business owners are the ones that tend to give us a call when we do a good job on their home system. So it's an easy shoe-in all the way down that chain, down to the business level clientele that we're really, really looking for.
Excellent. All right, cool. And it looks like you're also doing some blogging.
I do. I've been blogging for quite a few years now. I've always been great at writing. I wrote from my high school newspaper and college newspaper, and I've just always loved to write, so it's something I'm very good at. And I've used that written word to grow my presence from a blogging perspective. So I used to, you know, write quite a bit for TechNibble and still do once in a while, but my bread and butter of all the writing that I do now is actually up on Beta News. It's a technology news website that they talk about all kinds of different things, cloud and consumer tech and Office 365 and you know, enterprise tech. So there's a, you know, big smorgasbord of topics that they like to discuss on there. And, you know, they pretty much give me free rein. I pretty much can write on, you know, whatever I want. And I'm actually pending a review of Google Fi, and I've got an Office 365 series that I'm finishing up on there as well about Office 365 versus Google Apps. So that's been a really, really great source, because it's a way for me to get, you know, content out on the web and there tends to be a lot of linking that's done to these things that I'm writing, and it gets out into the right hands. And, you know, we've, you know, in a big part, it's allowed me to grow out my cloud consulting business. So I've done a lot of enterprise Office 365 migrations and Google Apps migrations. So those and VoIP installations. And a lot of that has come from a lot of the articles I put out there on those websites. So it's been very, very powerful. Again, if blogging may not be everyone's thing because it takes some time, and you know, it definitely requires a time investment. If you do it poorly and your grammar is not good, or you don't, you know, have things written well, or you know, it just doesn't sound like it's natural, or it sounds half baked, it's not going to be that great for you. So it may not be for everyone, but again, if you feel like you've got a good written word, or you've got something great you can talk about from a technology or computer repair perspective, it's something that you should definitely be considering for 2016.
Oh, absolutely. And I noticed you said Google Apps. You do both Google Apps and Office 365, correct?
I do. Okay. I do. So I'm actually certified in both. So it's something very rare, you know, this day and age, because, you know, most technicians tend to either go 2 feet first to 365 or be, you know, just entrenched in Google. I actually got my initial experience was in Google, and then I sort of went into 365 just a couple years ago. But, you know, I've been able to certify myself in both, and I handle both sides of the spectrum. So it's been really great from a perspective of, especially on some of the higher end clients where they come to us and say, hey, you know, we've gotten this advice or that advice, and what do you think about it? Well, I can say, you know, hey, I've been on both sides of the aisle. I work in both sides of the aisle. We can come to a very, you know, unbiased conclusion on where to go with that. Usually that answers Office 365 these days, but you know, there are some situations where Google Apps still does make sense. So it's good to be able to have that perspective of, you know, knowing both sides of the technology spectrum.
Absolutely. No, that's good. All right. So what else, what other types of things do you guys do?
One of the other ones that I do want to mention before we finish the section off, Jeff, is strategic partnerships. And this is one I've heard talked about, especially on some of the recent shows, in terms of, you know, guys that are, you know, partnering up on business. You know, you'll do this and I'll do this, and you refer your clients to me, and vice versa. I've gone one step further with that, and we actually have been partnering with a few different industry colleagues in our area for various different purposes. So we've got a partnership that we do with a few different single person shops, guys that are just very entrenched with a few different clients and are not taking as many people on, so they're passing work our way. We've got a few good relationships with those for residential business referrals, so that's really been helping us out on that side. One of the key partnerships that we actually have had for about a year and a half now, and it's only growing in size, is we actually got our foot in the door to work with a high-end home theater and AV company. They do a lot of, especially in the North Shore here in Chicago, where a lot of the big homes are and very wealthy people live. They do a lot of high-end AV work and, you know, and TV systems and AV installations, things of that nature. But all this fancy AV gear these days, luckily for us, all needs to have a very strong, solid network, right?
Right.
So they brought us in, actually, and we do all the networking for them. Aside from the wiring, they still handle the wiring for us, but we do the planning in terms of what kind of network equipment's going to go in, what kind of switches, what kind of routers are going to go in. We configure it all. We set up the policies that are needed, the traffic needs, the wireless setup for all that. So it's been a really great partnership from that perspective, because they do what they're good at, we do what we're good at, and it's been a great recurring source of work for us, because, boy, we're out about 2 to 3 times a week now for jobs with them, and it's almost like I almost need a full-time guy just to hire, just to handle their needs these days. So that's been really great for us and has allowed us to expand in the high-end home network side of things.
Excellent. Okay.
And then we also have a few other, you know, local partnerships. One of them in particular that I'm actually going to meet with tomorrow. I got a colleague that I sort of met in the industry. He does sort of managed services. He's a one-man shop out here in the Chicago area. And he, you know, we've sort of tag teamed strategically to work together on a lot of projects. And right now, boy, it seems like we've been on a string of overhauls for bars and restaurants in downtown Chicago. We've been, you know, overhauling, you know, network backbones and putting new routers and all kinds of Meraki devices in for them. So that has been a really great foot in the door for us in terms of getting more business work, but also, you know, getting into helping build out our MSP side of things as we're looking to court a lot of these customers into our managed services offering and bring them on a consistent MSP style basis. So, you know, if you're looking to how you're going to build out an MSP business, if you're looking to get into that side of business consulting, that's one way to do it. You know, look at a strategic partnership with someone that may be working in a particular, you know, vertical that you're looking to hit, like, you know, bars or restaurants or insurance companies or legal offices, things like that, and see if you can partner up and help them out with the kind of work that they're doing, because that has been a really great recipe for success for us. And, you know, I see 2016 as the year we're really going to be able to solidify a pretty good client base in our MSP side of the business.
Nice. Okay. What else we got here? Recurring revenue sources.
Yeah. So this is a topic, Jeff, that comes up on shows all the time. How can I go ahead and set myself up for getting recurring revenue and getting some recurring income going for myself. And some of the ways that we've been able to do that is primarily through two ways, right? I've talked about it already at length. As the managed services side, we've done the managed business side. We've been getting into that starting in 2015. But we're also in 2016 looking to offer a managed service style offering in the residential side of things. So we're looking to offer, you know, antivirus license, cloud backup, and we're still structuring the sort of the fine print around it, but also offer support or a block of hours that they could use for support from us during the year. So I think that's something that, you know, is really kind of where the industry is going at large, and something that, you know, even though it's a tough transition to make, you should see if you could dabble, see if you can come up with some kind of a test plan to introduce in your residential client base, because it seems like some of the people that we've been asking, if the price is right, I'll say that, the price has to be right, but if the price is right, a lot of people would be interested in having that kind of relationship with you. So don't be afraid to look into something like that.
Now, from your standpoint, you don't have to tell me exactly, but sure. What's kind of the right price or range of price that you've been seeing that would kind of work for a lot of people out there?
Well, it's funny because I actually, 1 or 2 months ago, I sat down and I actually got a lot of the material from the local big box stores, as those are the ones that are very easy to glean some of that information from. And I think I have to look back on my notes, but it seemed like on a yearly basis, a lot of those big box stores had plans either ranging from about $99 to about $199, and that included, you know, the antivirus, that included a little bit of cloud backup, but it usually didn't include, it actually included over the phone virus removal, but not much more than that. So
okay.
I'm actually looking to take it one step further. I'd like to offer something that offers some more general support, virus removal assistance, of course, the ability for them to bring the PC over here or us to go to the home if they need that kind of support as well. And then, of course, include the cloud backup as part of that as well. So we're sort of toying with a few price levels. We're looking to bring the price up a little bit above that $199 mark for our managed offering. And again, it's not going to be for everyone. A lot of people are going to be a little price sensitive to it. But again, when you look at it from this perspective of how much are they spending on that virus cleaning with you. And, you know, our virus cleaning that we do is, you know, right around the $150 mark. If it includes, you know, Windows reinstall or getting, you know, especially if it's a nastier infection, you know, if you could tell someone, hey, for just another, you know, couple bucks, you can go ahead and get on the managed offering and we'll give you the antivirus. We'll give you the cloud backup and we'll give you the, you know, the monitoring of your system. Some people say, well, you know, that might be worth it to them. So, it's definitely something that I'm sort of working the kinks out for, but in 2016, I'm looking to bring that to all of our clients' attention on the residential side sometime in the first quarter.
No, that sounds good. I, you know, the funny thing is there's not a whole lot of people doing that. There were some back in the day, probably back a couple of years ago, I started hearing about residential MSP or managed service support. And nowadays, there's a lot of people that are doing it for businesses, not a whole lot for the residential. And I think that's definitely an area that's missed. But like you said, a lot of times it comes down to being price sensitive. But if you can explain to people what it's going to do, because a lot of people will come to me and say, hey, how can I not get infected again? And I just look at them and go, you can't. There's nothing I can do that's going to be 100% going to keep you from being infected. But here's our best case scenario of what we can do to protect you the best we can from any type of virus that might come your way, whether it be crypto wall or whatever. So one of the managed services I do actually has a backup component. Now, I will not only do the cloud backup. Mm-hmm. I feel that that's not doing right by the customer. Now, this is my opinion. So I do the middle tier. I use Carbonite. I use the middle tier where they can plug in an external drive and it does a mirror image and it does a cloud unlimited cloud backup. And they can get a $59 Western Digital, you know, 2.5-inch drive that they can use. So it works out good for my customers. And that way, if something ever happens, hey, worst case scenario, if I get to swap out the drive, move the image back over, I can do that. They're down for a shorter period of time. But more importantly, depending on how much stuff they put up in the cloud, we can usually get to that stuff very quickly. And one of the things I like that Carbonite does is that on the mirror image backup, it doesn't show any file structure. You can't see anything on the drive. You can see that there's stuff on the drive, but you can't actually, the end user can't do anything. They can't accidentally delete it or anything like that. So I'm hoping that's going to protect people a little bit better down the road.
Well, and I think that approach is perfect. And that's kind of the same direction that we're taking with our managed residential approach that we're looking to get moving. And I think the reason this hasn't had the kind of traction that I think it's going to have as time goes forward. I think there's going to come a point in time, Jeff, where I think most techs are going to be going down the road. Just like on the business side, managed services is sort of the big thing that is really taking over. I think that's going to flow down into residential. And it's just a matter of getting that right recipe of price point, technologies that you're going to use to monitor systems and in terms of antivirus and anti-malware and patch monitoring, things of that nature, and cloud backup. And also the peace of mind, right? There's a certain point of where all that stuff comes into a perfect mix and where people will say, you know what, that makes more sense than me waiting and becoming infected and worrying about if my data is safe, whereas these guys will ensure that that happens on an automated basis. So if you can come up with a recipe like that and instill that kind of a peace of mind with people, you know, there is a price point where that becomes very well worth it for them. And that's what I think we have to get to that point on the residential side of things.
And I tell a lot of people too, I said, how do you want your computer to work as well as the day you brought it home from the store? And the problem is, so from what I've seen, I can do the best virus removal in the world. The problem is 2-3 months down the road, that PC, because whatever they're downloading, whatever they're doing, it's already starting to slow the PC down. Or they have some sort of error all of a sudden because of the little tools and free tools and stuff, browser helper objects, all that kind of stuff that they're downloading, toolbars. And it gums up the machine and they're like, man, why is this so slow? It's only been 3 months since you worked on it. Yeah. I'm like,
sure.
It's not me. It's you.
No, it's true. I mean, there's some people that you know, are high-risk surfers or high-risk users, as we call them around here at our office. And those are always going to be around. But, you know, in terms of when I started looking at this, you know, I asked myself, what kind of mixture, you know, this is the kind of stuff that's working on our MSPs for the business side of things. Why couldn't a similar kind of set of tools or services or an offering perspective work for the residential side? They have a very similar kind of set of needs. They want their computer to work. They want to stay virus free. They want to be able to, you know, rest assured that their things are backed up, you know, in the cloud. And they want to make sure that all their patches are being applied. So it's the same mentality. It's just being able to, you know, smush it down into a mindset, into a price point that makes sense for the residential side. So I think it's doable. I think it's something that should be looked at. I think it's doable. You know, I'm spending a lot of lost nights thinking about it and finding the right mix of how this is going to work. But I'm very convinced that if it's worked as well on the business side as it has, I think that home users, you know, most of them, not all of them, but most of them, I think would want to be able to have that same kind of peace of mind if it would cost, you know, whatever, $150, $200 a year for a machine, you know, well worth it compared to how much it costs to otherwise get a system, you know, cleaned up or, you know, have you taken a look at it every, you know, 4, 5, 6 months.
Exactly. So. No, yeah, it's definitely well worth it, I think. And yeah, okay. So let's move on from there. Let's see. Okay. It says here you had to prune your service offerings.
Yeah. Let's finish off in the section with this one.
Okay.
In terms of things that just didn't make sense for us to do anymore, Jeff. And I know that every tech or every company, computer repair company out there has always, you know, come across this kind of a scenario. But there comes a point when you're just getting started where you're willing to take on everything.
Right.
You're willing to do any single thing that comes across the table. And to a certain extent, you don't have a choice, right? You're sort of feeling out the market. You're sort of feeling out what you're good at, what you can do,
sure,
what makes money, what is very profitable for you. So some of that experimentation is a natural part of growing the business. But, you know, there comes a point in time where you start maturing, you know, the way you're doing things, and you have to ask yourself, do all these things still make sense for what I'm still doing and for what I want to be doing for my clients? And there was a few things that we had to go ahead and eliminate or exterminate, as I put in the show notes. We had to exterminate some of the losers that just weren't making sense for us. The biggest one of those was website design and SEO. Oh my gosh, I can't tell you how much time and energy and lost nights of sleep that we've had over the projects of this nature that just went south on us. And whether it could have been the bad mix of talent or the kind of expertise we were bringing to the table, but website design and SEO is just something that I'd rather leave to someone else. And this is where, when I was talking about strategic partnerships, this is where we have a partnership with someone, and we can say, you know what, we don't do websites internally, but we've got a great guy that works with us, works with a lot of mutual clients we have, and he does a great job, and I want to introduce you to him. So that's been a really great sort of easy way for us to slide out of that part of the market and allow others to do, do that task that they're very good at.
Right.
Website design. Another one was tablet and phone screen repairs. Some guys love doing these. Some guys are awesome at them, and they've got it down to a science. We've never been able to get down to a science with this kind of thing. We've never found the right mix of tools and suppliers or vendors to be able to do that quickly. So, we said goodbye to that. And that's, again, where we've partnered with someone in town that does that for us. DC jacks and motherboard repair on laptops. This is something, again, where we tried to do it before, and between, soldering on jacks and finding good jacks and tearing down laptops to the point where you need to be able to, get at that DC jack easily, it just from a time perspective didn't make sense for us. So we've outsourced that and, use a local vendor to help us out with those needs. And CRM. CRM was also something that, we tried to dabble in with Zoho CRM a few years back and a few others, and Podio, I believe, was the other one. But again, from the kind of skill set that we have, it just didn't make sense to keep doing that. And the person that does websites for us is also the same one that does some of the CRM consulting for our clients. So if there's any moral of the story of, the kinds of things that we let go of that didn't make sense for us, I would ask all the techs out there, if there's things that you just keep trying and trying and trying and just don't keep working, and either you're losing way too much money on doing them and offering them and not making money, and you just don't feel them fitting into your set of services, don't be afraid to step back, especially since we're at a year end right now and you've got some time to think around the holidays. Step back and think, does everything that I'm offering to my clients still make sense for us? And more often than that, you're probably going to find a few things, a few bad apples that you just have to toss out the window. And that's one thing I definitely want to leave everyone with.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Website design, tablet, phone, screen repair. I'd rather stick a fork in my eye than deal with either one of those.
Now, I feel the same way.
Unfortunately, I am so darn good at taking laptops apart. I can't get away from that. That's kind of my bread and butter as far as the hardware repairs go. So yeah, pretty much anything with a laptop, I've got it down to such a science now that it's one of the things I'm good at. But yeah, the rest of that stuff I've tried, and no, thank you.
And my list, and again, Jeff, part of the story here is my list is going to be different from your list.
Oh, absolutely.
It's going to be different from someone else's list. I'm not saying that by the things I mentioned, by all means, should be things that you shouldn't be looking at. It's just
right.
That was the list that I came up with. And those are the things that just were losing way too much money for us. So you don't have to be ashamed that you can't do something. Being able to say that you can't do it and you don't have the expertise, or you just don't want to spend the time on it because, cleaning off viruses or doing Windows reinstalls or going out and doing network installations is more profitable. That may be true. And that's where you have to not be ashamed of saying, you know what, we tried this, it didn't work, it's time to move on.
Exactly. No, I agree. Because doing a tablet or screen repair on a phone, for me, especially the tablets, I know some of the iPhones are a little bit better as far as pulling the screens off, having prepped screens, and you can swap those out fairly quickly. I don't want to deal with all that.
It's just so many of those screens these days. The smaller these tablets get, the smaller these smartphones are getting. They're all using these glued components.
Yes.
And you know, you can go on iFixit and see some of the bad and tough times that some of these devices take. And you know, for us, for as much as we charge on an hourly basis, you know, I have to be able to say, you know what, we can't do that internally, but I've got a great partner on the other side of town that does it, that I can take it over to. They've done a few devices for us. They are rock stars from that perspective. So, you know, just like you said, Jeff, if that's something you're good at, keep going at it, keep doing it. But, you know, for us, it was something that we just couldn't keep losing money on and keep stressing over. And, you know, we buy a screen from a supplier we thought was good. The screen we tried to install, we cracked it. Oh my gosh, I can't tell you how many times that has happened. So I said, you know what? No more. If it's a phone or a tablet, we'll take it over to the other side of town. They'll do it. They give us a business-to-business vendor rate, and we still make money on the job. So, you know, in the end, it's still a win-win. It's just that we don't have to stress over doing it in-house.
Exactly. So. Yeah, and I don't think everybody should be a jack-of-all-trades, because you literally become a master of none.
Exactly.
And that's definitely a good point to look at your strong. And that's what's cool about this business, is there's a lot of people that are good at certain things, and they really should concentrate on those things and then learn to partner with other businesses. I think that's key. And I think we've talked about that in the last several shows, both the shows that I do, in just finding those partnerships out there. It's, to me, it's not this huge competition that everybody thinks it's going to be. I don't want to be a Best Buy, or I don't want to be whatever store. I want to have a good clientele that will come to me for whatever their needs are. And when they get tired of me, they can move on to somebody else. That's perfectly fine. But I think that's more important, to be able to have the trust from the customer standpoint between you and the customer. So
you hit the nail on the head, Jeff. Right there, what you just said in terms of having that trust with that client, I think that's a really, really important point to make. Because again, you know, a customer's not going to look down on you just because you say we don't do that in-house. But if you can tell them, you know what, we can't do it, but I've got a great guy who's going to throw that, you know, hit that home run for you on that screen
right.
repair, or do that DC jack repair. The customer really doesn't care if they're still going to get the quality end result, and they're still going to be able to get the unit back in a decent time frame. And you're willing to put your name behind that referral of that person that you're using. So what? You know, don't be ashamed of having to say that you just can't do it yourself. And that's one of the things that, you know, when I was getting started, it's almost like, you know, one of those things you feel ashamed of. Oh, I can't do this. I should be able to do it. Or I'm going to feel like the customer's going to look at me a little differently if I can't say that, hey, I can just do it at my office. Don't think that way. You know, find the things that you're good at, excel at those, be a rock star at those items, and take those other things and partner up with those people that consider those items their expertise, and you will come out much further ahead, and you'll find yourself having more time to make money on doing the things that you're really, really, really great at.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I agree with that. All right. Well, Derek, we've had a ton of information in the show, and I'm sure we could have went over a ton more, but we'll definitely have you back, and we could talk about some of the other things that we kind of went over on the list
sure.
that we didn't quite get to, but a lot of great information. I've learned a lot. If people wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
A few different ways. If you want to find me online, you can find some of my writing on the web. I do, as I mentioned, I do a lot of writing for betanews.com. I put in the show notes. You can find the link on there. I'm very active, at least one or two articles a month that I've got coming out on Beta News. I still do some writing for TechNibble, and that link is on there too. And you can also find me on the FireLogic, our own company blog, which I do sporadically as well. But if you want to get in contact, if you want to get in contact with me, by all means, shoot me an email. The email that I'll give out is just my personal work email, so it's no big deal. Shoot me an email at DW, that's D as in dog, W as in Walter, at FireLogic.net. That's all one word. DW@firelogic.net. Shoot me an email. I get emails from people and computer repair techs all the time asking questions about, you know, getting started in the computer repair business, or how did you do this, or how can I do that? You know, when just getting going, I'm more than glad to answer any of those kind of questions. So feel free, do reach out.
Absolutely. Well, I thank you for your time and coming on the show and sharing with us. And all of that stuff will be in the show notes, because Derek has put together a phenomenal show note page, which I will just add, and we'll put that in there. So you guys will have all the links and everything to get to him and all the things we talked about for this show. You guys can find me over on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish, or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show like Eric was, please email me at Podnuts Daily at podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNimble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You too can help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Hallisch. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.